everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you. Buckmaster in the driver's seat, and riding along with me on the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on this Friday, March the 18th, 2022. Tom, I caught a little bit of the, and I'm so glad I did, of the St. Peter's versus Kentucky game, which went to overtime. So I saw all of that, a 15 seed beating a 2 seed. So glad I tuned in, because that was so exciting.
Kentucky's out. Iowa is out.
Iowa's out.
University of Connecticut lost.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting tournament shaping up here.
Well, there's a lot of parity, I think. So this is going to be a great tournament for sure. It's going to be a great day, a beautiful day in the Tucson area. It's Buckmaster on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk. Our radio station call letters, KVOI, The Voice. We're beginning our 12th year here with the radio show, 34 years on TV and radio in Tucson. You have worldwide live listening of my program anywhere in the world, as long as you are on your computer. It's buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed from our KVOI.com, their 24/7 service. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Fridays, we do our big media shout out to our friends in the media here, TucsonSentinel.com. Thank you very much to Dylan Smith. Thanks to Dan Shear of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, the Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, State Senator J.D. Mesnard is with us on the live line. J.D. is in his second term as state senator from District 17. 17 covers Chandler, Gilbert, and the Sun Lakes area. J.D. Mesnard previously served in the State House of Representatives for 8 years, including he had a major leadership position. He was Speaker of the House for the last 2 years of his 8 years in the House. He currently serves on the Government and Finance and Commerce Committees, and he is the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee. Joining me in the conversation, J.D. will be on the live line and with me in studio for her second return. It's a return visit. We liked her so much for her premier visit. We invited her back, Mary Glenn Hatcher, Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, ace reporter. Mary Glenn, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Bill. Thanks for having me.
And you have your Carolina sweatshirt on because Mary Glenn went to Chapel Hill,
mm-hmm.
and she is a huge basketball fan. In fact, she could only go to the home games, the ones that she won the lottery. I mean, there's so much interest that they have a lottery to determine who goes. But Carolina won yesterday.
Yeah, I was super happy to watch them. They dominated, as I saw some reports. Yeah,
very cool. All right, Senator Mesnard, good to check in with you again, and congratulations are in order. What's this new addition? I'm seeing these great pictures on Facebook. What's that all about?
Yes, well, the pictures don't capture the sleepless nights, but we do have a second addition to our family, Annazelle. She's 6 weeks old. Callie L., her older sister, is 2.5, and I'm not sure she's appreciating the competition, but we're excited for our family to have gone from 3 to 4.
Very, very cool. What about this session? How is it going? Kind of the overview before we take a deeper dive.
You know, there's been a lot of emotion this session, and that's a function of a lot of big issues that we're confronting, but also the effect of having, you know, bare majorities in both the House and the Senate, which can empower any one member who might be very committed to the issues they want to see move forward, but may not have total buy-in from the rest of their colleagues. So definitely concerned that the session could drag on, but hoping we can come together and get some good things done.
What needs to be done? What are the big issues? Of course, the budget.
The budget is always a big one. And in fact, we have a big surplus, $1 billion ongoing surplus, as well as a $2 billion one-time surplus. Our budget is about $13 billion. So having a $3 billion surplus, as you can imagine, is pretty significant. The most pressing issue at the moment involves the tax policy that we pushed through last year, which in light of a recent Supreme Court decision at the state level has sort of thrown that a little bit up into the air. So we're considering repealing and replacing it with a different version. We've got election bills. We've got bills related to parental rights. You know, we've got the whole gamut. But definitely the most impending issue is the tax package.
And since you brought it up, and it is in my stack of stuff for you today, and that is that, let's call it a $3 billion rainy day fund, the governor would like to see a large portion of money spent toward the drought and water. Do you think that's a good idea?
I think if we're going to look at long-term sustainability, that water has to be a top consideration. And I realize, you know, those of us in Metro Phoenix where our water just, you know, magically shows up in our house every day, you know, aren't necessarily paying as close attention as some of our more rural communities to what's happening with water. But no doubt we're in a drought, and the levels at Lake Mead, et cetera, are very low. So a lot to be concerned about. And definitely water needs to be a top priority.
Let's turn it over now to Mary Glenn Hatcher from Green Valley News. Go ahead, Mary Glenn. You're with J.D. Mesnard.
Hi, J.D. Thanks for being with us. I was going to pose a question about the gas tax. I know Governor Ducey was not interested in suspending the 18-cent a gallon tax during this time, but I want to know your thoughts on that.
So, you know, the challenge with that is the tax does go to some very important infrastructure and, you know, road requirements. And if we suspend it, I mean, it would shave off, you know, maybe a buck from, or, you know, a couple of dollars at the gas pump. When you're looking at $5 a gallon, you know, 18 cents is just not a lot. And considering what it would be funding or what we would no longer have enough revenue to fund, I'm not sure that that's the best approach. And frankly, the gas prices fluctuate by 20, 30 cents in a day. I'm not even sure the average person would notice. So I think in the end, it could do more harm than good.
Would that be something the state legislature would, if the governor wanted to lift it and he's been inclined not to, but what if the legislature wanted to? Whose authority is that, J.D.?
It would be ours. The state gas tax is set by the legislature. It hasn't been changed in a very long time. And frankly, some would say it should go up because you're seeing fuel economies improve. And so less money coming in, despite the fact that we're driving on the roads the same amount. I'm not suggesting that we should increase it. But my point is that I think there'd be a lot of resistance to eliminating it, even if it's temporary. I think there's other ways we can help our taxpayers that really would more than offset any few dollars they might save if we suspended the 18 cents.
How about taxes? You kind of brought that up about revising some of the tax code, and this usually goes over everybody's head, but it's very important. Will there be any kind of a tax cut this year out of this legislature?
As you may recall, and I alluded to this earlier, we did pass the largest tax cut in state history last year. But then the courts subsequently ruled on another issue that the tax package was trying to address, and it made about 20 to 25% of that tax package moot. So we are looking at repealing and replacing it. There are those who are trying to stop it. They did get enough signatures to, at least theoretically, there's litigation, I guess, that raises some question, but to stop what we did last year from going into effect, which would be very disappointing. We are very much focused on making sure that more money is going to our taxpayers, or, you know, keeping more of their own money. This flat tax that we passed last year, I think, did that. We may have to revisit it this year. And to the extent that we do, it's going to be a top priority.
Is Arizona one of the most progressive when it comes to flat taxes?
So we have a progressive tax code of four different brackets. We're not one of the more progressive tax income tax states. I mean, of course, you're looking at California and some of the surrounding states as a reference point. Our tax code ranges from about 2.5 to 4.5, and we would be collapsing it down just to that 2.5. We would have the lowest flat tax rate in the country, which I believe, which would be a good thing for making us more competitive and more attractive a state. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we do okay. I just think there's room for improvement.
All right, let's bring Mary Glenn back into the conversation. Go ahead, Mary Glenn.
Yeah, I was going to ask on that flat tax plan, what were you looking to change as compared to what the voters kind of signed a ballot for in 2020? What kind of things were you looking to change with this new plan?
Well, if I understand the question as far as what the voters were referring to, so the voters narrowly passed a surcharge of 3.5% on top of the 4.5 max rate in our income tax code. That was passed in 2020, narrow margin. The courts have looked at it and said the way it was drafted, which may have been the reason it passed, was unconstitutional. And so they struck it down. And so it's sort of on life support at this point, and we believe in the coming weeks it will be gone. We had passed a tax package not knowing the court was going to do that. So we were trying to mitigate what was going to give us one of the highest income tax rates in the country, the second highest in the West to California. And so with the court now having struck that down, part of what we did last year has become obsolete. And so what I would like to do is redirect what was going to be some tax savings over sort of on the left side. I want to redirect it over to the right side. That's a simple way of saying it anyway, to make sure that it's still going to our taxpayers.
All right. We had a caller who did not want to go on the air, but has a pretty good question that we would like to convey. The caller wanted to know, with all the interest in electric cars, will the users of those cars be paying any road usage taxes?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And in fact, some of the tax policy bills that you've seen move through the process have started to go down the road of, user fees or increased registration fees that are applicable to electric cars or even hybrid cars because, yeah, they are driving on the road the same amount, but they're not contributing via the gas tax the way that others do. That's what I was alluding to earlier, that we're seeing less revenue even coming in from the gas tax and the rise of electric or hybrid. I have a hybrid, so I have a benefit, and I'm not paying my fair share. So I think that it's something we need to address. And as we go into the future, if we don't address it, we're going to have a bigger and bigger problem with more driving on the roads that aren't paying for them.
All right, we're going to pause right here, J.D. Mesnard, so we can talk about my favorite bakery in town. Do you like bakery goods?
Sure.
All right. Well, listen very carefully, because the next time you come to Tucson, you might want to visit Mona's Danish Bakery, and it is the home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Actually, Mary Glenn, you live in the Foothills area, so you need to check out Mona's for sure. Mm-hmm. Mona's is the home, as I say, of the Danish Kringle, but they're also home of some fabulous European-style pastries and breads. They're open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 for breakfast. You can usually find me up there Saturdays or usually Sunday. I'll be up at Mona's in the morning, dining, having breakfast, sometimes an early lunch, but for sure making a Mona's run to make the weekend complete. Find out what all the excitement is about. Go to monasdanishbakery.com. Beautiful pictures of all the menu items on the website. You can call ahead for your bakery goods, so be ready when you come by, or just stop by Mona's and have a great experience. We'll be right back with State Senator J.D. Mesnard. He's with us on our live line, which is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mary Glenn Hatcher is with me in studio. We'll continue with J.D. right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Friday edition, our Friday focus interview. State Senator J.D. Mesnard is with us on our live line. Mary Glenn Hatcher from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun is with me in studio. And Gil has called us. Gil has a question about, and there is a lot of interest in electric car usage and regulations. Go ahead, Gil.
Yes, thank you, Bill. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question for your guest. After I just paid $4.50 a gallon for regular unleaded, why is the government picking winners and losers? Why not have the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, and all the other manufacturing companies of electric vehicles pick up the bill for the charging stations?
Okay. Senator Mesnard, any thoughts about charging stations?
So that the charging stations aren't something that we have any connection to that I'm aware of. In fact, I was under the impression that some of these companies were funding them because they're trying to encourage more usage of electric vehicles. I could be wrong, but to my knowledge, we are not paying. The state is not. I can't. You know, the feds could be doing things. They passed some interesting bills lately. But the state is not doing anything that I know of as far as paying for charging stations.
Would that be under the Arizona Corporation Commission generally, if there were any regulations concerning that?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, they deal more with utilities, railroads, that sort of thing.
Okay.
The idea that someone would buy an electric car, that type of regulation, I'm pretty sure that's not under the Corporation Commission.
All right, let's talk a little politics here. Arizona and at least five other states, have introduced legislation that would require all election ballots to be counted by hand instead of electronic tabulation. Some of your thoughts.
So, you know, it's one of those things where there's a concept and some folks really like the concept, but then there's the how would you make it work practically? And let me give an example with just the math of it. So in Maricopa County, there were, let's say, 2.5 million ballots that were cast, just in Maricopa County alone in this last election. And so folks are like, yeah, you should count all 2.5 million by hand, and we want you to do it in a day. I mean, that's a lot of counting of ballots. But what they don't even think about is that each ballot has about 70 or 80 different races on there, especially when you throw in the judges that take up a lot of the ballots. So you really, when you do the math, you're counting about 150, 200 million votes. And so I'm not sure how you do that by hand in such a short amount of time. And so I think there are other ways we can ensure the integrity of our election system that we can achieve, whereas I'm not sure how you could possibly, you know, practically do what some of the folks who are pushing that idea. I'm not sure how you can do it.
Is it moving at all in the legislature, this idea?
It's not. No.
It's not. Okay. So that leads me to the follow-up question about the state Republican Party with their suit to do away with early voting. The governor has said he doesn't think it's a good idea. I think he called it ill-conceived. Would you join him in that kind of criticism?
So I guess I would say, with the caveat that I really don't know the legal angle, that I haven't been focusing on the legality of it. Certainly we can talk about the policy of should we or shouldn't we on mail-in ballots. I'm a guy who likes to go to the polls and vote in person. I think that is the preferable way, because you get the results instantaneous and there aren't issues of, or at least not as many issues as can occur when you're mailing in your ballot, you know, regarding ID or fraud or whatever. It's much more transparent and secure. So I definitely prefer that. But the truth is, any effort to do away with mail-in ballots would end up getting referred to the ballot. Even if we passed a bill, they can stop it. And then it would be folks who are 80% of which are mailing in their ballot that would be deciding whether or not they get to continue mailing in their ballot. So it's hard for me to see from a policy perspective how it goes away. As far as the legal arguments, I'm not super aware of them. But I'll be honest, I personally would not be disappointed if we go back to how elections used to be, which for the most part was going to the polls, and folks overseas, military, we obviously make exceptions for them.
All right, let's bring in Mary Glenn Hatcher of the Green Valley News. Go ahead, Mary Glenn.
Yeah, I know you mentioned you were talking about you had your own ideas about changes for election reform. I know there's several proposals. We just mentioned a few that have worked their way through the Senate but have failed. So I'm just wondering what's still on the table for you, and what are some of your ideas as far as election reform goes for the state?
Sure, great question. Well, one of the bills is actually a referendum that's going to go to the ballot that I did run was a voter ID for mail-in ballots proposal. And we did get it through the legislature, and it will go to the ballot this November. And that was passed a few weeks ago. It was based on a bill that I ran last year that did come up just a little bit short in the House on the votes. But this new and improved version, and especially the idea of allowing the voters to decide, did get enough support at the legislature. In a nutshell, it would say that just as we have ID when you go to the polls, we would require ID when you mail in your ballot. Right now, we do not. When you sign the affidavit and mail in your ballot, that's not ID. That's just saying, I promise I filled this out. So we don't really require ID. What this would say is that when you mail in your ballot with the affidavit, you would need to include your date of birth and either the last four of your social or your driver's license number, which is pretty typical for how you confirm your ID, you know, like to your bank over the phone, or so a very familiar way. That's what would be on the ballot. And I think most people are going to go for it. And I think it would do a lot for ensuring security of the mail-in ballot.
Is that being done in other states about some kind of ID like that? Maybe the last four digits, as you say, of the social?
Yeah, so I can't take credit for inventing that idea. You are starting to see states go down this road. And I want to say, I think Pennsylvania has something similar. But I think this will be kind of the new gold standard. The truth is, there a lot of states don't even allow for mail-in ballot, or at least they don't allow it to the same degree that we do. So you have a fewer states that you can kind of look at out there. But as you look at conversations happening in Florida and Georgia and Texas and other places, you are starting to see this, what I would characterize as a pretty common sense. It's not any kind of hurdle to the voting process. These types of policies emerge, and I believe it will be the standard in the future.
This will be a legislative-backed initiative that will go to the ballot when?
It'd be in November of this year. It will be on the ballot. It's already passed the legislature, so we have officially referred it. And so the voters will have the option when they get in when they get their ballot in the mail or they're in the voting booth to agree that this is a reasonable way to validate mail-in ballot. It would also beef up a little bit the voter ID you show at the polls when you go. Right now, there is a way you can quote unquote show ID without showing a photo ID. This would specify that it does have to be a photo ID and that we would provide one to you for free if you don't have one and it's for voting purposes. So again, very much a common sense and not in any way a hurdle to those who want to vote.
Any others? Mary Glenn brought up, asked you about a kind of an overview, which was a good question.
Sure.
There's some other things that our listeners should know about in the area of what would be called voter reform.
So there are probably more bills about this subject than any other subject, so hard to capture all of them. I have some of the, I would say, bigger ones, that one I just described being probably the biggest example. But I have another bill that would, for instance, beef up the auditing procedures. Now, this is not related to the audit that the Senate conducted, but just the every election cycle audit of the machines, where we take a sample of a hand count and compare it to the machine count and make sure everything's right. So I have a bill to improve that process. Another bill that would hope to give voters the opportunity to actually feed their early ballots into a machine when they go to the polls. Another that would allow for better tracking of ballots. Again, there's a plethora of different ideas, and some are better than others. Some are surviving the process better than others. Those are some of the ones that I'm running.
Besides election reform, one of the other seems like it's a real hot topic. It concerns education and what role parents should have in the whole parent-teacher involvement. There's one bill, it's Senate Bill 1211, that would require listing of all materials and activities for student instruction, ranging from textbooks to the digital materials and on it would go. This would really beef up what some see, an area that's lacking would be the transparency between parents and teachers. Some of your thoughts, J.D. Mesnard.
So I am 100% behind Senate Bill 1211. I applaud Senator Bartow for bringing it forward. We passed it, unfortunately, along party lines in the Senate for reasons that baffle me. It seems more and more that some of my friends on the other side of the aisle don't quite have the same sensitivity for having parental engagement. And the truth is, one of the byproducts of COVID, frankly, is you're seeing more and more parents engaged in the curriculum because in many cases it was being, done virtually. And so the kids were at home. And I think, you know, that's maybe a silver lining for this challenging period of our history is that parents are getting more engaged. And I think rightly so. And one way to facilitate that is, as the bill would require, making sure the parents can get access to the materials that their kids are exposed to, but also see online the types of materials and curriculum that schools are using. I think parents are the best decision makers for their child's education, and this is a way we can engage them more.
Now, the knock on this is that it's hard enough to recruit teachers to work in Arizona, and that this would be one more roadblock, a stumbling block that would make maybe young teachers say, well, maybe I'll look to another state rather than Arizona to get involved. What do you say to those critics of this?
Well, I do think you are seeing other states pursuing similar legislation. So if they're trying to avoid it, it may not be possible. But I would say if we all take a step back, we should acknowledge that the number one predictor of a student's achievement, their outcome, is parental involvement. The second is, of course, a quality teacher. So we need both of those things. I'd rather focus on, you know, increasing teacher pay and classroom spending as a way of attracting teachers, not avoiding what we believe will be an important way for parents to engage in their child's education.
How much say should a parent have in curriculum, as far as you're concerned?
How much say?
I
think they should. I think they should have total say.
Really?
Meaning, if they want to opt their kid out of something, I mean, they are paying for this. They're paying through taxes, of course, but they are paying for it, and so there is an ownership there. Now it has to be within reason. You know, at some point it would just make more sense for them to, you know, send their kid to a private school or something that's more tailored. But I do think in terms of accessing at least what their kids are learning and saying, you know, hey, I'm not okay with these certain areas of the curriculum that are more controversial. You hear people bring up, you know, critical race theory or gender identity ideology that parents are like, you know, I don't know that that's for my kid. And so I think they should have the ability to even opt out of those types of activities. But at the very least, as the bill would propose, they should have access to see what it is that is being used for their kids' education.
All right, before we let you go, Mary Glenn, a couple of final thoughts on your behalf.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to, staying on the topic of education, the Senate just approved an expansion of the state school voucher system. I was wondering if you could talk about that and what that means for students and parents in the state.
Well, I think we've been struggling, actually, to get the votes for expanding. We don't have a voucher system, but the equivalent, essentially expanding school choice. Again, with the narrow margins that we have, we haven't been able to get it through. And the House has been the bigger challenge than the Senate. Look, as same theme. I think that parents, the more engaged they are in the education of their kids, the better. They know what's best. And so sometimes, you know, if a public school setting is not working, giving them a little extra financial assistance to find an alternative makes sense to me. And again, since they're contributing to the system anyway, it also seems to be an issue of fairness.
All right. Before we let you go, we're at the middle of March. Last year's session, I think, went into May. Am I correct on that?
Actually, it went until July 1st.
Did it? Oh, my goodness. That's
it
right.
Did, yeah.
Wow.
Exceedingly long, and I do fear maybe I'm answering your question without you asking.
Yes.
We could have an equally long one. I'm not hoping for that, but just with all the challenges and the slim margins, we could have a very long session yet again.
Wow, that's right. You know, in my long time here in the state, I recall stopping the clock on June 30th.
Yep.
And we really took it to the limit. That was the first year in many that we'd taken it to July 1st. But you see kind of maybe a similar situation brewing.
I unfortunately can easily see that happening, not only because of last year's experience, but when you have a bare minimum majority, it means you have 48 different majority party members who can in and of themselves stop things. And that makes it really difficult to navigate. And we saw it last year, and we could see it again this year.
All right, Senator Mesnard, are you following the basketball tournament?
You know, I'm so involved in session only from a distance.
Yeah, and you're so involved with the new addition to
That's
the household,
true.
Too, so that you've got a lot on your plate. Thanks for taking some time to talk with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, State Senator J.D. Mesnard, we thank him for a wide-ranging conversation. Mary Glenn and I will be back. We're going to talk about a few of the stories, some very interesting things going on down in Mary Glenn's neck of the woods. We'll tell you about that right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. all of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And it was good to have State Senator J.D. Mesnard on the program, on our live line from the state capitol. Mary Glenn Hatcher is here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. I think we covered, Mary Glenn, a lot of ground. Senator Mesnard certainly is a big one for the parent teacher legislation that's moving through the at the state Senate and House. There's also so much going on under the kind of the umbrella of what you would call election reform. He doesn't think that would be possible to do, count every ballot by hand. But I was not aware about that this is going to be on this initiative that will require ID for early voting, that the voters will that will be put to them in November.
Yeah, that was news to me, too. So that was interesting.
All right. Sheriff Nanos, Pima County Sheriff Nanos, spoke to the Green Valley Council. You covered that. The council is kind of like a city council. I mean, Green Valley doesn't have a city council, mm-hmm. but the council are the decision makers in your area. What did he say about his staffing?
Yeah, so he spoke yesterday and was talking about he's looking to beef up his staff over the next couple of years.
He said that in 2016, when he left the department, he had about 1,600 deputies. When he came back in 2020, nearly 20% fewer staff. So now he's at about 1,300 deputies and support staff. So he talked about the fact that it affects his ability to do community policing, which to him is a real cornerstone of what he wants to do and have a presence in the community. So he basically spoke about a plan over the next couple of years to ask for, you know, some more money from the Board of Supervisors, from the budget, to kind of bring some more staff back and get some more, you know, police on the streets, really, is what it was.
Mm-hmm. Because Green Valley is covered by the Pima County Sheriff's Department.
Yeah, yeah.
So he would like to see even more staff there at your substation.
Yeah, and in rural communities in general, you know, he said, when you're looking at a shift, let's say in the Green Valley substation, and there's an incident in Aravaca, there might be half of the support staff at the substation has to leave and go to Aravaca to address that situation. So he also said, you know, having more deputies could lead to more rural support staff and kind of help rural communities have that presence a little bit more. Yeah.
Actually, I probably should have brought this story up to segue when we were talking about early voting and ballots. Our friend Dan Scheer, your boss and the editor down there at Green Valley News, has an interesting story coming up on Sunday about, well, you tell the story about a gentleman who suddenly figured, hey, I don't live in California. Why would I cast a ballot in California?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Our newspaper was contacted. This is a man in Clifton a couple of months ago. He's lived in Arizona and voted here for 7 years now, mm-hmm. but found out shortly after the 2022 election that a ballot was cast in his name in California, where he used to live. So the story that will be in our Sunday paper kind of chronicles what he went through to kind of talk to the state and talk to California and kind of figure out what the situation was, and it actually led into a criminal investigation being opened up. So look for that story in our Sunday paper.
I wonder how the other guy over in California or woman voted on his behalf illegally.
Yeah, it's an interesting story.
And that brings up something that I know Dan always likes to talk about. Readers who contact the paper sometimes have really great ideas, and they turn into wonderful stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, we have so many amazing people in the community who have had so many different experiences, and it's really cool to hear their stories. Mm-hmm.
Also coming up, a story about the Rex Ranch.
Yeah, so our assistant editor, Lillian Boyd, has a story of some new life coming to the dormant Rex Ranch property. So it's in Amado, just a little bit south of Aravaca Road. The property was originally part of the 1820 Canoa Spanish land grant and has kind of switched hands several times over the years. It's been a dude ranch, a finishing school for girls in the 1950s, and a restaurant and a spa most recently. But some new California-based property owners and developers are looking to renovate and restore the historic property into a boutique resort with wellness and recreational amenities. Mm. So you can look for that story in our Sunday paper as well.
And where is it again, the Rex Ranch?
Yeah, it's in Amado. It's about a half mile south of Aravaca Road. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are you also working on? If you've got some stories coming up, what are some of the areas that you've been covering?
Yeah, so I'll be doing a story more in depth about the sheriff's asks mm-hmm. for more staff. I'm also kind of looking into retail theft incidents. The Tucson Metro Chamber recently kind of spoke about reestablishing their CART, which mm-hmm. is Coalition Against Retail Theft. And at the Board of Supervisors meeting this week, the president kind of spoke out and said it's an issue in the metro area and we're trying to address it with the attorney's office, law enforcement, and business owners. And so I've kind of been talking to local people and trying to see, you know, what the situation is in our area, kind of south of Tucson, and see what the situation is.
Yeah, the new head of the Metro Chamber, Michael Guyman, mm-hmm, was on our program about a month ago, after he was named, and he pointed out that that was one of the big areas that when he talks with merchants, they're saying, hey, this thing about the theft is just exploded as a big issue. And so I'm glad they're moving forward with that. Before we let you go, is the real estate boom that's been happening in the metro Tucson area, has that translated also to Green Valley?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think the Pima County Assessor's Office has just released some really interesting stats on this. And so I think the median home value sale has increased around 23%, and that's in Pima County. So definitely affected Green Valley and Sarita. And yeah, we're seeing a lot of, it kind of affects rental properties too. And so I think it kind of plays into the kind of trend with evictions that we're seeing and just, you know, lots of prices increasing everywhere. So definitely an interesting thing to be following now too.
We will look for your work in the Green Valley News. Mary Glenn Hatcher, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, coming up next, we have Weekend Watch. Matt Russell, Inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist. A couple of ideas, a couple of tips what to do this weekend in the Tucson area. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
And here we go with a mid-March madness, crazy weekend ahead of us. Weekend Watch presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start planning for that 3-hour, that's not a bad drive at all over to Silver City, 3 hours approximately east of Tucson. And once you're there, take a deep breath at that in that 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation, beautiful, rather thin air, great place to go hike in the Gila National Wilderness or just hang out in historic Silver City. For things to do, and there are a lot of them, and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is, the longtime host of Weekend Watch, Mr. Matt Russell, award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson business, food, and beverage columnist. Matt, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Great show today, Bill. It's always nice to hear Mary Glenn and her
return
to the show.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And we just got some news here about Old Tucson. Let me quickly give you this. They did name American Heritage Railroads, operating as Old Tucson Entertainment LLC, that will be taking over running Old Tucson, which is good news.
Oh, that's absolutely good news. And leave it to the Buckmaster Show to break good news in this community.
There we go. Thanks to Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott for forwarding me that notice a few moments ago. What's on the agenda for the weekend?
Well, you know, let the bear downs begin, Bill. The U of A men's basketball team goes up against Wright State University in the first round of the tournament today. Tip-off is at 4:27, and I strongly advise your listeners to grab a seat early at their favorite sports bar. My personal pick for hoisting a pint or two today is the Station Pub and Grill on Silverbell, just a little north of Cortero. Nearly 20 large screen TVs populate this place, which means the Wildcats are going to be visible from every seat in the house, and they've got a ton of great craft beers. Plus, it's Fish Friday. You'll get a platter of beer-battered Alaskan cod with fries and all the fixings for under $9. Bear down, Arizona, at the Station.
Going to be a great weekend for basketball. Also, Marana has a big day, don't they?
Yeah, believe it or not, the town of Marana is turning 45 years old, and a special celebration has been planned for all day tomorrow over there on Civic Center Drive. It's Marana Founders Day, starting with a parade at 10 a.m., followed by a car show and musical and dance performances, lots of vendors and exhibitors, games for the kids and such. But come hungry, like I always do, because there's going to be 20 food trucks on site, including some fan favorites like Recurus de Venezuela's Smokin' Monster Barbecue and more. I think my strategy is to start with the first truck and just make my way down the line. So happy 45th to the town of Marana. You don't look a day over 40.
How about wine and wildlife, my friend?
Yeah, it's the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. They're going to be hosting their second annual Wine Down with Wildlife Festival tomorrow night from 6 to 9:30. You're going to be able to sip on some local and regional wines from some of my favorite Arizona wineries. You can also take in some live music, do a little stargazing, visit with the animals, all while supporting wildlife on this World Wildlife Day. Tickets are just $45, and you can get them on the museum's website.
Oh, there's so much going on this weekend, and I know in the basketball arena already those big upsets yesterday. St. Peter's toppling the big guys from Kentucky. Man, that was a wonderful finish to that game.
I tell you, I was telling Tom during the commercial break, you know, let's just hope this idea of the upset takes a day off, and it can get back on Saturday, that's fine. But today on Sunday, no more upsets, please.
Okay. Have a great one and enjoy. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music was composed by my German friend, Christophan. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt. She makes sure that our podcasts are up in a very timely fashion. Everybody here at KVOI, including engineer and producer Tom Fairbanks, and really the entire team that supports us in such a professional manner at Bustos Media Tucson. Have a great weekend. Go Cats.